This is the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Now, here are Denise and Hunter, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome, everybody, to this Wednesday edition of Newsmakers at Noon. I am Denise Quinn.
And this is Hunter Newton.
All right. We have been neglecting to do this. It's like, ugh. But we are giving away some Mariners tickets.
Yes.
And and I'm like, oh, we got to mention that. We got to mention it. So finally, I'm like, okay, let's mention it. It's a Facebook contest. We are giving them away. It's for the September 5th game. So that is next week.
All right.
It's two tickets. Row 16 or section 116, row 20. It's at T-Mobile Park. All we need you to do, as we always do, is go onto Facebook, DM us your email address, and then type in Mariners Ticks, and then we will give away a pair of ticks.
There
so
you
cool.
Go. Yeah, I saw it on Facebook a couple of days ago, and then, you know, we hit the airwaves, and, you know, with Real Estate Insights, of course, yesterday. You know, there's more important things, I guess, than to mention that, but we're going to get it in there. We're going to mention it in you know, get those Mariners tickets, put your name in the hat, and let's pick some winners.
Yeah, yeah. And typically, they're a little shorter time, but you got like a week mm-hmm. and a half.
That's right.
To get these in. We will announce the winner on Thursday, or we'll just pick the winner on Thursday. I don't know mm-hmm. if we'll announce it, but anyway. Okay, yesterday we talked very, very briefly about the passing of the one and only Dolly Parton. And then today I wake up, and one of my favorite actors of all time, Tim Curry, mm-hmm. has passed away at the age of 80. Both of them were 80 when they died. Both of them amazing, amazing entertainers. Tim Curry.
Well, I just sit here and go, you know, these two in particular are so iconic and going to hold that place in pop culture for eternity.
Yeah.
Dolly for her music and her acting. And of course, Tim Curry is that actor. And then, of course, a producer and director. And you just go, we are losing so much right now.
Just can't
out of just these two people.
Exactly. And you look at she was a prolific songwriter. She was also very, very generous. She probably could have been a billionaire a couple times over. She gave away over $600 million and she did it with no fanfare, very quietly. And she's kind of the last of the universally beloved. I would say Tim Curry might be in there, mm-hmm. although he was a bit of a taste, because he was in Rocky Horror Picture Show as mm-hmm. Dr. Frankenfurter. Holy cramoly. And then, of course, in It, he scared the crap out of an entire generation. Muppet Treasure Island, Long John Silver, Home Alone 2. I mean, it goes on and on and on. He was brilliant. I loved him. She was beloved. But yeah, you're right. They left such an indelible mark. They don't make them like that anymore. They just simply don't.
No. And the Dolly Parton thing, she crossed so many genres and mm-hmm. bounds and this and that. I mean, just this morning, as I was kind of thumbing through news stories, there's a story out there that Eminem has come out and said that she wrote him a letter that let him, you know, kind of change his life and the things he took out of it. I'm kind of going, how wow. many longtime country singers are reaching out to rappers? Especially ones that you know, surround themselves in controversy at times,
yeah.
to kind of give them an inspirational letter.
And I bet there were a lot more that we'll probably never know about. I watched Steel Magnolias last night. Oh, I had a good cry. That movie is so good. And she was so wonderful in it. I started trying to watch 9 to 5, but that's a little dated and a little of its time. I turned it off halfway through because, frankly, I can't stand watching Jane Fonda in anything. So,
well,
but she again was brilliant, and not Fonda, but Dolly Parton.
So what's the movie of choice tonight? Is it Rocky Horror? Is it Home Alone 2?
I saw a midnight showing back in the day at the Elsinore Theater, the Rocky Horror. That's the best way, really, mm-hmm. to watch Rocky Horror. Overall, it's not that great of a movie. He's brilliant in it. Mm-hmm. So I may do Muppet Treasure Island tonight. I don't know.
Ooh, there you go. Well, and I can definitely see theaters around the country doing some bonus runs of Rocky Horror just for that experience and to kind of
have you
commemorate
ever done that?
Him. I have not. I have not.
Oh, my gosh. This was back in the late 70s, early 80s. I was in high school. And of course, you've got the toast and the newspapers and, you know, you're acting along with the movie and it's absolutely a blast. And the Elsinore was great about that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Maybe the Elsinore will do that. That would be kind of cool.
Yep. And yeah, I mean, 80 years old, so not super surprising at 80.
And he had a stroke in 2012 as well.
So yeah, we're losing icons left and right. And I don't know if there's a new generation that's going to be able to kind of hold the candle going forward.
I was trying to think, is there anybody, because of course we lost the brilliant Robin Williams in 2016. We lost Prince in 2016. That was a bad year, 10 years ago. I just can't think of anybody who's up and coming and young who has that universal appeal. That's certainly Dolly Parton. I wasn't really a country music, and her style of country was like old school country.
Yeah.
But she was, I mean, of course she wrote I Will Always Love You, which became one of the biggest pop songs of all time for Whitney Houston.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the thing is you can go through the current, you know, artists that are out there, and even some from, you know, the 90s or early 2000s, and you go, who has that mass appeal where, you know, everyone knows who you are no matter what you're involved in? And that was the thing with Dolly Parton. It wasn't about glitz and glamour. She did her thing, and her thing brought her to the forefront of everybody throughout generations. I mean, what, a couple of years ago she was at, you know, I believe she did the halftime show at Thanksgiving game at the Cowboy Stadium.
Yeah, and she always looked amazing, and she never hid the fact that she had work done and everything, was so much of it was fake. I was thinking, it's like, and she also didn't wear her politics on her sleeve. I don't really know what her politics are. I never really cared. Same kind of with Tim Curry. And I was thinking, because Julia Roberts was in Steel Magnolias as well, and maybe before she opened up her big mouth about her politics, she might have been that. Pretty Woman, everybody loved her in Pretty Woman, and she was kind of when she was up and coming. But other than that, I just can't. Everybody, you know, Mark Ruffalo, good grief. John Leguizamo, I mean, they're idiots. It's like, literally, shut up and act, you guys. So I can't think of anybody. If they kept their politics out of it, maybe. But they can't do it. They cannot do it.
No. And that's so much of the challenge with today's environment, is everybody who has even the slightest bit of notoriety needs to chime in on the things that they have no business chiming in.
Exactly.
It's kind of like, you know, recognize it's whether it's a, you know, an iconic business, whether it is an iconic actor, a musician, whatever. It's like, no one cares what your politics are, and to accept the money. I mean, you look at Beyonce, you look at Taylor Swift, willing to kind of take the money and make their pitch for a certain politician. And you're like, why are you wasting your time doing that stuff? Or even worse yet, the ones that do it without any real noticeable financial gain, like the Dixie Chicks, who you're just trying to pander to your audience, and it shows so much.
Speaking of the Dixie Chicks, the whole thing with Jelly Roll, who I really don't know too much about him, other than he used to be fat, claims to be a Christian, now he's skinny, used to sort of fangirl about Donald Trump. Now he's dissing Donald Trump, and you're seeing all the reports of, and he lost half his fan base. And again, I listened to a little bit of what he said. It was snarky, snotty, and not very funny. It's like, why do you guys do this? Just shut up and sing. Republicans buy sneakers too.
Well, here it comes down to, you know, we've talked a number of times on the Sports Ticket, Jeff and I, about, you know, back up with Michael Jordan saying, you know, I'm not getting involved because I play basketball, but also, his Nike thing, when he signed with Nike initially, it was for a very low upfront money in financial benefit at first, but it was the stocks and the things that made him the billionaire that he is today. And I sit here and go, and you look at who's financially advising so many of these people, a guy like Jelly Roll. It's like, long term, you have so much more earning potential. But for a one-time payday, you're willing to burn every bridge you can and likely destroy your future earnings.
That's a really good point. And I don't know, so many of them do that for the dopamine hit of being sort of like getting a high five from one of the teams, one of the political teams. It's very short-sighted, and it's really pretty stupid.
Well, it's so sad to me that politics has infested sports and entertainment the way it has.
Yeah.
Because sports and entertainment really should be our way of escaping the heaviness of politics. And instead, these people are forcing it down our throats.
So again, rest in peace to the beautiful, wonderful Dolly Parton and the amazing Tim Curry. I mean, I think kind of really some of the last of a real true one of a kind breed of entertainer, and I'm going to miss them both incredibly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think all of the country, I mean, I think it is awesome that flags will be flown at half staff for a week for Dolly Parton. I'm sure Tim Curry is going to be included in that one as well. So
I did see it was over in the UK. I don't know if it was the Queen's Guard or something playing 9 to 5, the band. Mm-hmm. So I mean, like a marching band playing 9 to 5 in tribute to her. So so sad day to lose them both.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know. I think it will be Muppet Treasure Island. It's certainly not going to be it.
Well,
as Pennywise the Clown. Oh my gosh.
Well,
no, thank you.
Especially, you know, Home Alone and, you know, Dark Room After Dark.
Yeah, we're not doing that. We're
looking out the window, wondering where the nearest sewers are. And
yeah. That would be a bad idea. All right, we're going to take a break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Miller's Barbecue and Catering and Color Tile of Salem.
All right, Coin News posted this on X, yesterday, I guess, sometime. Oregon State researchers say, surprise, surprise, the northern spotted owls are functionally extinct.
Oh, no. What did we do? Did we cut down too much logging?
We burned them probably out. but the Democrats exploited this owl to push their environmental extremists. And so they basically, they destroyed the, we talk about this a lot. Mm-hmm. It destroyed the timber industry. I mean, did so much damage to rural communities, locked up the forests, and prevented forest fire management. So now we have fire season every year and thousands of acres burned. So is anybody surprised that these progressive leftist policies have basically made the one thing where we're fighting for the owl, and as it always happens, nope, the one you harm, first of all, other than the most important one, which was the timber industry and loggers and their families, but now the damn owl is extinct. It's like,
I would pretty much say that these policies have led to the northern spotted owl being functionally extinct. Because, like you said, by not logging, we are creating an environment for their predators to thrive. And we know that it was a predator, not humans, that caused, them to be an endangered species.
The barred owl.
And now you add in the fact that we are burning the vast majority of Oregon every year. You know, the owls, physically, they will escape a fire. But let's say they have a nest with some eggs in it. Mm-hmm. That is not escaping. So guess what? We have now burned out the next generation of owls.
Yep.
Because of our own irresponsibilities, our own unwillingness to do what should be done.
And as always, leftist progressive policies do the exact opposite of whatever it is they are trying to sell you that they are caring the most about. They're most compassionate. They care about this or that. Whatever that is what is going to be harmed. They didn't give two craps about loggers, their families, about rural communities and schools and all the infrastructure that logging and the timber industry provided to the state of Oregon. Didn't care about that. Cared about this little owl that was never in jeopardy from logging in the first place. And we all knew that back then. Mm-hmm. But of course, they've been ruling the roost in Oregon, no pun intended, for 40 plus years. It's so frustrating. Are people going to vote differently this time? This is just yet another example.
Oh. Well, we can come up with yet another one because, you talk about these leftist policies that create a society where we are also kind of lackluster, independent. And, another CoinSick story, Oregon is one of the least hardworking states in the U.S.
Again, I'm not surprised. And it's a certain demographic. It's not necessarily older, where there's a real strong work ethic. How many times do you hear employers don't want to pay $17-18 an hour for a kid fresh out of school because the work ethic is just not there?
Well, I sit here and I go, this is so not surprising with our minimum wage being what it is.
Yeah.
So now you have virtually taken the 16-18 high school kids that would be maybe bagging groceries or working at a McDonald's, this and that. You're taking those kids completely out of the workforce.
Yep.
You are now, hesitant to hire 18 to 25 year olds because they don't have that desired work ethic. And as we know, employers, it costs a lot of money to train and prepare an employee.
Onboard.
So you literally invest a ton of money up front to bring in new employees. And when they don't pan out, now you're out that money and you're just redoing it over again. So we've taken and made it harder for high school graduates, even college graduates without a specific degree to find work. And then you add in the fact that, and I know this for a fact because I have talked to people about it, people want to limit their hours that they work. They don't want a full-time 40-hour work week because if they work 40 hours, guess what? They're no longer eligible for food stamps, housing assistance, Oregon health plan. So they weigh the financial benefits of things like that against the financial benefits of having cash in your pocket and having to pay for those things. And they realize that by working 25 hours, I come out on top financially because the government will cover the rest.
Now, do you think that's that? I'm kind of seeing a lot of comments here on this story, too. A lot of people saying, you know, it's kind of a Willamette Valley, because you look at Eastern Oregon, Southern Oregon, you get a lot of people that are, they're ranchers and things like that. And again, you might be talking about an older demographic. The entitlement state of this state, though, is very true. I mean, it's like drug central destination. Come here, you can get free drugs and they'll give you the pipes. They'll give you the food stamps. They'll give you all these things. And we know, and we've seen stories about a lot of people who are scamming those systems. And then you have generations of families that are on the dole.
Yep.
And so it's just sort of this, it's been generationally bred into people that you want to stay on this. That is a recipe for disaster for any state. And you don't have people that are upwardly mobile and looking to improve their lives.
Well, yeah, we're definitely not talking about everyone out there. We are 49th in the nation. Michigan is 50th.
Yeah.
And, you know, like you said, is there are definitely very hardworking people around this state, all over it. The challenge is when you're talking and they bring it up in politics season all the time. Well, there's a whole lot more people in, you know, along Western Oregon than there is in Eastern Oregon. So obviously the amount of non-hardworking people, people on the dole, people, the 5+% unemployment rate, all of those factors, yes, that is majority of Western Oregon. And you wonder why Eastern Oregon is like, let's do something different, please. Let's just like build a wall.
I, again, the greater Oregon thing is not going to happen. It just isn't. But what about West Oregon and East Oregon, West Washington and East Washington?
Yeah.
I guess that would take an act of Congress as well.
Well, the one that I grew up with was the state of Jefferson, which was Eastern and Western, or Eastern Oregon and Washington becoming their own state, because realistically, financially, they would probably need to join together just to get a few major metropolitan areas, Bend in Oregon, Spokane, and of course, Spokane's burned out now in Washington. Otherwise, you know, one major city in a whole state's probably not going to cut it on the financial side for the road maintenance and all the other fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's not a good stat that you want to, that you really want to have at all. And I had a link open here again, Representative Younger.
Yes.
Dwayne Younger has been really kicking it up out there. And it was, but I clicked the wrong tab. But talking about Oregon kids are struggling and Kotech just said no to another option. And it's that the federal option, because of course, you know, she's running against Donald Trump this election cycle.
Well, he's running for governor of Oregon as well as serving as president of the United States. So no wonder.
Yeah. But this was, I think it's $1,700, basically kind of $1,700 from the federal government. It is taxpayer money, but that you could use towards basically school choice.
Mm-hmm.
And but no, Orange Man bad. So Oregon families, because she doesn't share his values, and she thinks everybody else in Oregon shares hers. So we're not gonna give that benefit to families that are struggling. I mean, you look at, there's 8 schools in Salem Kaiser closing. And there are a lot of alternatives, which in the next hour, we're going to talk to some folks about one of those. But this is the kind of stuff, who the hell does she think she is?
Well, and that's the craziest part of this. This is, you know, if she kicks and screams, says we need more money for education, we need this and we need that. The idea, and we're what, 47th, 48th in education? The idea that needy families could receive $1,700 in assistance, where you could send your kid to a, you know, an alternative learning, like a private school and this and that. And she's not willing to accept that. Tells you where her priorities truly are when it comes to the education of the young people of Oregon.
Yeah. And, you know, it's so funny because you look at, like, she doesn't have any kids. Mm-mm. So I don't know how, but then you look at somebody like Dolly Parton, didn't have any kids either, but was absolutely a philanthropist and did everything she could to help kids, especially with literacy and reading. So it's just wow. much rather have the model of Dolly Parton than the model of Tina Kotek.
Well, and I just sit here and I go, if that $700 was offered to the homeless drug addict,
yeah,
would she have a problem with it? I doubt it, because why not just give them money to sit on the streets and
it's coming from
drugs?
Orange Man Bad. It's an Orange Man Bad policy, well, maybe, so we just can't have that.
Maybe I'm saying we need to start calling her bluff and, you know, the things that she deems most important, you know, offer up the same offers and see what she's willing to accept versus what she's willing to turn down, because it would be interesting to kind of really call the bluff on a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, but again, it really isn't helping. So all the lip service you get from this governor about it's for the kids and I'm doing everything I can, mm-hmm. and I really care, and then something like this, but you can't have that. Yeah. Because when you think about it, you're not talking thousands of dollars in tuition for a private school. It's maybe $300, $400.
Mm-hmm.
Really? And so that would go a long way. $1,700 would go a long way.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I just sit here and go, the most frustrating part of being in Oregon is this mentality that I'm going to give you all the lip service in the world, but yet turn down options.
Yeah.
And we're just going to go with the most straightforward, you know, even if the long-term benefits are not even there, simply because, gosh darn it, I'm in charge and I'm going to, you know, pee a circle around this state.
Well, there's a chance to right the ship of state, or at least begin tacking to the right direction. Mm-hmm. So, all right, we're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news, and then we're going to come back and learn about Hope Academy. Come on back.
The Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance, continues. Here are Denise and Hunter on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Green Acres Landscape and GA at Home.
Alrighty, welcome back, everybody. Thanks for hanging out with us on this beautiful, not too smoky, not too hot, kind of all right kind of day in the Northwest.
It's a great late August day.
Yeah, well, you know what? It's the 26th, which means summer's almost over, and it's about time to go back to school. In fact, some kids are already back in school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we got 2 weeks. 2 weeks or so.
So we were talking in the last segment about programs that Oregonians really are not being allowed to utilize to look at alternatives in education. And we wanted to bring on Cindy McLean, who is with the Hope Academy. She's one of the founding members. She's a director, to talk about Hope Academy, hopeacademytd.com. Cindy, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Well, thank you. It's great to be on.
So we love alternatives. You parents are not. They're not stuck in public school. There are a lot of options that are out there. And so we wanted to have you come on and talk about the Hope Academy.
Yeah, I'd love to talk about Hope Academy. You know, we started Hope Academy back in 2020. As you know, that was the COVID era.
Oh, yes.
And we're pastors. My husband and I started a church. We're just a small church. We're, at that time, it was only around 30 people. But God just put on our heart that as a church, we need to do something to help parents. In our area, the public schools were shut down. Everybody, they were having to, you know, do everything online. So, and parents, our heart really went out because here parents now, especially single parents or double parents at both work, now was not only in charge of, you know, bringing the income in, but educating their kids and, so we really just thought, as a church, we need to do something to help families. We were challenged by, I don't know if you've heard of the organization, Pacific Justice. They help with religious liberty.
Yes.
So they were talking us through, as churches, what to do during this time. Mm-hmm. And he kept saying, church, you've got to help families. This is our time for the church to step up. And so I kept praying about it, and at that point, he said, if you can't do anything else, start a homeschool co-op. And that I could wrap my mind around, because I homeschooled our children. And so that's what we did. We just started with right where we have, and I just like that. I hope I can encourage anyone out there that you don't have to have everything in line to start to help families, to help education system. So we started there with just a little homeschool co-op, started 15 students that first year. Mm-hmm. And it began to grow. And then a few years in, after starting our third year, we was able to actually buy a whole, it's a school that was formerly a Seventh-day Adventist school. And
wow.
Move into that. Yes. And so, and this year, this is our first year, we have been able to transition from a homeschool co-op to a full now Christian private school. And that's our heart, to help families with an alternative for their children to teaching. And so our philosophy is kind of partnering with parents to give a quality education that glorifies God.
That's so wonderful that you did that. And again, you did that 6 years ago and you've grown, had so much growth, which shows that there really is a need for that and a want for that, especially when parents, when everybody, all the kids went on screens at home and a lot of parents were like, wait a minute, you're teaching my kid what?
Yeah. It was eye-opening to a lot of people.
Yes. And so again, you guys are located in the Dalles, but we wanted to have you on because you did this through your church. There are churches in the Salem and Kaiser area that could do this too.
You can. That's my big encouragement. You know, our overall ministry is called Mustard Seed Ministry, and and that's our kind of our philosophy, that you only need the faith the size of a mustard seed. That's very little, and just a yes to the obedience. And if God has been putting it on your heart to help families, give an alternative. Start with what's in your hand. That's what we did, and we hired it. We said. We said, okay, we'll hire a few teachers. We'll buy the curriculum. Parents, you come and you pay this tuition amount, and we'll help you. And it was a partnership, and so that's how we started.
What's your enrollment right now?
Well, right now we are around. I think we're right around 53 at the moment.
Excellent.
For this year. Yeah. Started with the 15 and it, our next year, it went all the way up to 39 students. And, like I said, we're a very small church and our very small building. We were packed out and, we just really began to pray for a bigger facility. So then we got the school grant and now we're able to grow and so continue to grow, but it's, we're going against culture. We're, It's hard, and I have to say it's hard, but we feel like it's very rewarding.
Oh, and I imagine it's just an absolute blessing to the families. Now I'm looking, do you go through middle school? Does it go all the way up to middle school?
Yeah, through eighth grade. We start with 4-year-olds and go through eighth grade.
So those kids are there for a while, really getting a really good, solid Christian education before they then transfer, in probably a lot of cases, to the public high school.
Yes, we have both transition, either public high school or parents then will just do the homeschooling part on their own through, you know, a lot of online high school programs. But yeah, we try to really give our kids a worldview, Christian worldview, to get them solid. So when they do do the transition, if they go into the public school, they got a good foundation.
Yeah, you really want to have that going in. I'm clicking. You've got some of the programs and things like that. Obviously, this is Christian based, but you cover everything. So you've got kids that are coming out of there loving Jesus, but also knowing how to read and do math.
Yes, we make that very strong. We do academics and you know what? We even do cursive writing.
Whoa, I love that.
Yeah, you know, all the studies about that. And one of the things we promote our school with is low screen time, little screen time. We believe in hands-on teaching, writing. Yeah, get drilling, get those math drills down, you know, learn phonics, learn reading, learn writing, and then the creative writing. And then in the afternoon, we do a lot more hands-on science, hands-on life skills. We do the home ec. We have an awesome lady that I tease her because I think her main life goal is that every student knows how to use a sewing machine.
And so, good.
She got other people that donate your sewing machine and teach it, you know, basic sewing.
I love it. Knowing how to hem your own pants. I know how to darn my own socks. I actually do know how to darn socks. Well, I don't do it very often, but I know how to do it. Exactly. Life skills, learning how to cook, balance a checkbook. And I see you've also got field books and field trips rather, and the supply. So again, before we're just about out of time with you, your hopeacademytd.com. You did talk about there are a lot of resources out there if a church or, you know, if you're just an individual, you're hearing this, or a home church want to do this. Where's a good place for folks to start? I mean, obviously to go check out your website to learn. But if this is if somebody feels called to do this.
You know, they could contact me through there. Okay. I would more than happily talk to them, and any experience I know, I gladly share. You know, we just jumped into the getting curriculum. We have good solid curriculum, and then hired a couple of, teachers that were not certified, but they were teachers at heart, and we just started with what we had, and so that's how we did it. But I would gladly talk to anyone that is thinking about it.
That is so wonderful. What a pleasure to talk to you, Cindy, and I'm glad. I mean, this sounds just like a wonderful thing, obviously, for the folks in the Dalles. What a blessing to them, and thanks for being so open to share with our listeners who might be interested in doing something similar.
Yes. Well, thank you for having me, and God bless you.
God bless you. Okay, with that, we'll link everything up in show notes. We're going to take our last break. You're listening to Newsmakers at Noon on 1430 KYKN.
Now back to the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers at Noon is brought to you by Cozy's New York Deli.
I haven't thought about Cozy's in a while. Have you seen Cozy's social media? Is very tempting, by the way. They're always making sandwiches online. It's like, oh.
Well, you know, I'm never impressed when, you know, people I know are posting what they're eating online, what they made at home. But, you know, when a restaurant like Cozy's does, that impresses me a little bit.
It's like, okay, you had me at the gabagool. I'm coming down. Anyway, great to talk to Cindy. What a cool model Hope Academy is, and that can be duplicated. I know there are a number of schools. I know when our son was young, we went, we did the private school route up until fifth grade. I like that this one goes to eighth. But then tying it in, because Salem Kaiser has announced they're closing 8 elementary schools here over the next couple of years. So,
They're aiming to close some for next year because their student enrollment has dropped, I believe, 5,000 students since COVID.
And so COVID opened up the eyes of a lot of parents. A lot of people are leaving public schools in general. They may be staying in Oregon, but they're saying enough with this. And then a lot of families are just leaving. Yep. They're moving.
Yeah, they're moving out of the area. They're moving. I mean, we talked with Amy a few months ago about kind of the increase in people moving out to more rural communities, which, of course, is taking them out of Salem-Keizer, putting them into Cascade or other schools nearby. Yeah, there's really not a big surprise, especially when coming out of COVID, you put all these kids. I remember my, you know, kindergarten first grader being on a screen for school. And I'm sitting here going, my wife spent as much time as she did dealing with that platform. But coming out, Salem-Keizer introduced their own EDGE program. So there are kids that are going through school virtually online the full time.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of going, so is, you know, yes, technically those students are still enrolled with the school and the teacher or whoever's overseeing the online academics is being paid. But is there as much money coming in for those students because they're not utilizing a building? So I'm kind of like, how does all of that work? So
let's dig into that.
Is Salem
journalist hats on.
That's right. Is Salem-Keizer kind of doing it to themselves by removing actual students from the classroom?
Well, Salem-Keizer, Oregon in general is pretty abysmal as far as in the ranking. It's at the bottom of the barrel. And of course, there's a lot of, you know, woke curriculum and stuff that parents, you know, and again, like I was saying with Cindy, that when COVID hit and you're like, wait, what are you teaching my kid here? What? That's not okay. And then of course the screens and all of that. I love the superintendent who went to hand talking school, putting these videos out on Insta and everything else, which is kind of an odd way to do it. It doesn't seem very serious to do it that way, but I don't know.
Well, we've talked a lot about these kinds of videos, whether it's governor, the superintendent, you know,
with
the
Legos,
the hostage video kind of mentality.
Yeah.
The other thing I started questioning is, I think she's put out like 3 videos so far about it. I sit here and I kind of go, are we doing this via social media rather than the, you know, direct to parent mentality or the town hall meeting announcements or this and that? Because it's a way to get kind of less input and keep it a little bit, because I'll guarantee there's a whole lot of parents and grandparents in the Salem-Keizer School District that are not on social media, are not seeing these videos, and probably at this point still don't even know realistically that they're planning on closing schools.
Have you, as a parent in the district, gotten any direct communications about it?
I can't think. There might have been an announcement over the summer, kind of mixed in with all the other kind of announcements about, you know, the conversation being had that schools are going to be closing.
Mm.
But I can't think of anything just kind of directly about that. I know I haven't seen any of these videos that I've come across on social media.
Yeah.
So I kind of wonder, is the direction, you know, these school board meetings, if you are, you know, especially once they announce a school closure, and I would guess that they're probably at this point leaning towards the older school buildings,
mm-hmm.
simply because they are not as cost efficient as the newer ones,
right.
Just based on general knowledge. So I would suspect, especially once you announce the closure of a school, you're going to see some jam-packed school board meetings.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm wondering if this kind of way of kind of avoiding an early rush on having a lot of parent input coming to these meetings.
Well, given the level of decorum at those meetings and like city council meetings, I can't say I blame them for that, because they just turn into these ridiculous free-for-alls and a lot of rudeness, and, you know, they're just not great. But again, you do have a right to go speak. These people are elected. You mm-hmm. elect them to put them in there. If you don't like them, fire them.
Yeah. If only that's so much easier said than done in this community. But
I know.
We'll also go to, you know, we're not talking about any high schools closing or even
right,
middle schools.
Elementary.
These are all elementary school level. And I kind of go, the other part of this is, ideally, wouldn't it be so nice to have these elementary schools at 20 to 25 kids in a classroom, which, of course, if they shut it down, we're going to go back to seeing 30 to 35 kids in a classroom. And I go, the educational difference and the ability to handle outbursts and things
yeah.
like that are hindered by piling more kids into a classroom, which is
right.
what they will end up doing if they close 8 schools.
Plus, you're going to have longer bus routes for a lot of these little kids, too. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to be bused over to different schools. So, again, I don't know all the details of it. We're just seeing the hand-talking videos right now. So that'll be interesting. I don't know, but it's over the next couple of years. But there are all alternatives out there. And again, like Cindy was saying, they felt really, really called to do that. And mm-hmm. and this model of school is just, I'd be doing it if I had little ones.
Yeah. Well, it is definitely a quality option, because they're not going to be bogged down by all of the social agendas that our public school system is so packed full of. And I, for you know, from my perspective, I would love to give those opportunities and have people willing to step up, and churches especially, willing to give those opportunities, because I believe that smaller classrooms, more direct mm-hmm. education, and focusing on the things that matter are going to be the biggest benefits long term compared to what the public schools are able to offer.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you know, I saw this, and we need a scare music
button. I know.
Button.
We need some scary
scare. COVID-19 spike with new symptoms. COVID is like a respiratory. What are the
not
new any, symptoms?
Not anymore. It's no longer just respiratory. Now it goes after your tummy. You might get some nausea and diarrhea. And, you know, reading the article when I saw this the other day was hysterical, because, you know, now they try to pass it off as, well, as we know, viruses mutate. I'm going, show me another virus that's gone from a respiratory illness to a digestive illness. Find one.
It's learning. It's just, you know, it's a big tent virus.
Yeah, well,
just a big tent virus. Lots
well,
of symptoms.
It's just a name to strike fear. And it even says in the article, it says the word COVID still generates a response from families. And I'm going, so you're virtually telling us exactly why you decided that a tummy bug is now COVID, because that way people will react to it.
And the, judging from the comments that I read this morning, the response from families is a big eye roll. It's like, it's somebody was like, stop it. We're not falling for this anymore.
Well, I mean, I agree with a lot of the comments of tell me you're in election season without telling me you're in election season. Because yeah. I just go, the fact that they think people en masse will continue to buy this at this point. We've all seen what went on with Fauci and his pleading the fifth. We all have, you know, are starting to hear the realities of what we all went through. And those of us that sat back and logically thought about it and said, none of this makes sense. Why are people buying into this? Are once again deemed correct. And I'm just going, you know, COVID and the flu. I mean, COVID eliminated the flu for a full year.
It
the
did.
Flu
did. Yes, it did.
I said, realistically, we should celebrate.
It cured it.
Well, I said, no, it didn't cure it. It eliminated it. So I said, look at it this way. Every year, how many thousands of people die from the flu? At all ages, young to old. And now we have a disease that has eradicated the flu statistically. And it's the majority of the people that are passing away are, you know, had pre-existing conditions. It's not getting the kids. And I'm going, so
and
none
it never
of,
was. It and, never did.
Yeah. None of it made any sense. So now they're going to rehash it with it's a tummy bug now.
And again, it goes back to looking at, you know, the spotted owl is now basically functionally extinct. It's leftist policies, left of progressive policies that do the exact opposite of how they are sold to you. Mm-hmm. COVID is right up there with it. And I don't think any, you know, you're going to see there are masks in Oregon, people wearing masks in Oregon. Frankly, sadly, there still are. So there's going to be a cohort of people that are going to jump right in. It'll make their life meaningful to go out there and shame a mom in the grocery store again for not having a mask on her toddler. Those people suck. Well, they're just awful.
Well, and that's the thing. It's like, yes, there is going to be a section that buys into this.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
But it's on those of us that realize what a farce all of this has been to give up every liberty and they can possibly yank away from us to stand up and say, no more. We're done with it. You can believe what you want. If you're so nervous about getting this new COVID tummy bug, go stay at home. Don't come out.
Stay at home.
You can have your groceries delivered now. Heck, you can even do school online.
So there's no reason to ever leave your house if you don't want to.
Well, and that's the kicker is what did we see during COVID? People complaining because they wanted to go out and do things, but they got 16 shots and they're wearing 3 masks and this that. But it appalls me to see someone without a mask who's not, you know.
It's just, we cannot memory hole what happened. We have to remember. And I'm glad there are a lot of people out there reminding us of what celebrities said, what health officials, what the government, what the elites, what they all said and how they tried to sell us down the river with this. Do not buy it again.
Well, one of the ones that caught me was a small county somewhere in the U.S. They were releasing the COVID numbers and they had 4 COVID deaths, 2 of which also suffered from gunshot wounds.
Yeah,
it tells you a little
never
bit
forget.
About it.
We cannot forget that. We cannot forget. All right, everybody, that is it for us today. Everything we talked about with Hope Academy will be in show notes. We'll see you tomorrow.
This has been the Rich Duncan Construction Newsmakers at Noon with Denise and Hunter, presented by Hagen Hamilton Insurance. Live local talk that matters to you. Exclusively on 1430 KYKN, where Salem is listening.